It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome Cecil Harvell. He's on the phone with us. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm fine. And a stranger here in the studio, Wes Collins, is back in the studio. Good morning, Wes. Good to see you.
I'm back. Good to be here, Mike.
He is back. So, gentlemen, what's our topic of discussion today?
Well, Mike, let's talk about nuisances as an interference with one's enjoyment or use to their property. I think that more and more people over the last year have become homebodies and are spending more and more time on their property.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, we have seen a bit of an escalation in calls to our office about, you know, neighbor issues. Maybe it's, constant burning of debris. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's constant dog barking. Got a file that came in just this week that we are yet to really kind of answer concerning, a noise, a constant and everyday kind of noise that a person is enduring, on their property as a result of their neighbor that is quite loud and serious, so they're telling us. So, you know, what are some of the things we can talk about and kind of demystify in terms of where's the line in the sand on things like that?
Well, you mentioned a lot of topics, and living in my community for the last 20 years, I can probably give you anecdotal stories about each of those instances, such as a barking dog. I guess what is the first step that a property owner should take? Let's use the example of the incessant barking dog that lives right uh-huh. next door and keeps them, you know, keeps the neighborhood yeah. loud all day and night.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that we would begin our analysis with, you know, are we in an association? You know, are there some covenants or restrictions or any kind of guidelines, concerning our property? A lot of properties, as we know, Mike, a lot of folks do live in a subdivision or in an area that has some restrictions that we could rely upon. And then the other alternative is that someone, you know, just is in a rural area or in a non-restricted property area, and there's nothing to govern that. So that would be a place that we would start with regard to the barking dog, and I'll get Wes to chime in here in just a minute. But, you know, if you are in a certain subdivision, there are some restrictions in some restrictive covenants concerning the control of a barking dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have those in our covenants, Wes. We were talking this before we go on the air, kind of a CYA type of covenants, you know, creating a nuisance. The barking dog would be the example of that. That might be easier to flesh out and understand, but Cecil, you bring up a good point. I'll let Wes tackle it. You live in the unincorporated area of a county without covenants, and you have the same situation. What does property owner that is living a quiet life next door to a loud barking dog residence do?
Right. So the covenants are going to be the most restrictive. Cecil's right. Of course, we look for that first. And then in the event that we don't have covenants because we're not in a planned community development subdivision type situation, then, you know, we're looking to see if potentially there is an ordinance that might protect us in some way. Sometimes a noise ordinance will extend into things such as a barking dog, since that's what we're talking about today. So we look to see if there's any type of government restrictions such as that ordinance in type. And then finally, we look to the law of nuisance, and that really is the primary topic of the day. And nuisance is basically, you know, when someone is taking some action on their property that affects usually a neighbor, a very close neighbor, their quiet use and enjoyment and reasonable use of their property. You know, this could be things like the barking dog that just won't stop. Or this could be things like, repeatedly, burning debris.
Trash.
And I've got smoke every day, all day. Or it could be, a noise type situation that's not the barking dog. It could be vibration of the property as a result of your neighbor, using dynamite. I mean, it could be anything. Your neighbor, you could have a commercial
automotive
next door.
Sure.
Those type of things. So there's lots of different elements of this and things that we have to analyze, because you can't move into a neighborhood that, for example, is zoned in a certain way or does have that kind of activity already going on that you had notice of. For example, if you move next to a mining operation, you can't move in there, build your house and then complain about the nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you're on notice of that. So there's all kind of different situations, with regard to this. If you are operating your property, within the restrictions of the law, meaning you're operating the property consistent with the zoning law, let's say you're operating a business in some sort, and there's action that's being taken to try to disrupt your use of the business, then that could fall into nuisance. I mean, sometimes we have situations where we have, development taking places in areas where there wasn't development. Sometimes we have situations where we're maybe this was traditionally, nice, quiet farmland, and that's the way it's been forever, and now there's some type of business being operated there, but it's being operated properly and mm-hmm. under the law. And sometimes, as a result of that, the neighbors might not like the fact that you have a business going on there and may try to frustrate the use of that business. And that could fall into, of course, a nuisance. So it's quite a balancing act, Mike, because, the right to use your property as you wish is a strong right.
And
so you got that on one hand.
Yeah.
But you can't overdo it and get to the point where you are aggravating or upsetting or disrupting the quiet use and enjoyment within reason of your neighbor's property. So it's a balancing act, no question about that.
It's a balancing act, as Wes describes, Cecil, but it's also very subjective, is it not? Like as Wes said, a quiet farmland could be converted into a light industrial park, including perhaps maybe a racing team, and they're building engines there and they're testing the engines. They make loud noises when they rev up. That may fall into that category. Proper use of that commercial property, but being so close and adjacent to a residential neighborhood up until this point has lived the quiet life, and now all of a sudden the Penske racing team moves in next door, all
right.
Within their rights.
Yeah.
Again, it sounds subjective, but what documentation do you look for, either audio, visual, or other, to begin to make a case for your client if they came into you and said, hey, I think this next door neighbor is a nuisance now?
Well, I think, again, Mike, the first steps of analysis are going to concern, any zoning, any ordinances, any restrictive covenants. I know we mentioned that earlier, but with barking dog, for instance, I read an ordinance recently that defined what was the nuisance in terms of more than 20 minutes. If the dog barked, the ordinance actually says that if the dog is barking on a daily basis for more than 20 consistent minutes, okay, then that would be considered, that's a tangible example of a violation. So we would start with that. And then after that, it really does become kind of like we've talked so many times on the legal program here, Mike, about, what is reasonable,
mm-hmm.
the reasonableness standard, the reasonable person standard. Is it reasonable to have this noise or this smoke or this, whatever it might be, next door to our property? Is it consistently and without ceasing, creating this nuisance? Is it a daily, weekly, monthly event? every little detail is going to make a difference in the presentation of the case, because, again, you are weighing, as Wes was mentioning, you know, the person who is creating the noise over there with the go-karts or whatever it might be, that is, that placed their operation within the laws of the zoning laws, you know, has a right to do what they choose to do on their property. They have some reasonableness that flows their way as well. So, both are going to have to be balanced and looked at in terms of evidence. Absolutely. I mean, you know, Wes was showing me, you know, last week photographs concerning, you know, a case that we have in our office about property right interference and, you know, photographs, tape recordings, videos, anything of that, with statements from other neighbors, okay, concerning this. How many people, how many property owners are being affected by this noise or by this particular nuisance? Is it just one neighbor or is it, you know, several neighbors? So these cases are going to frame up as lots of bits and pieces that at some point, kind of, if you will, you know, the scales just fall a certain way. That's unreasonable. Any group of reasonable-minded people will think that what is occurring is, in fact, an infringement of use and enjoyment of the person's part of the person's property. What I think is important, our time is always limited, is for our listeners to know that, you know, that, hey, you don't have to just continue on and on and on to put up with, you know, these barking dogs or these smoke clouds or whatever the case might be. You know, you do have the right to the to the safe and permanent use and enjoyment of your property. And there are some remedies out there if the infringement, you know, really is becoming extreme.
That's a good point. If we can, let's maybe take a break on that point. And you kind of put the tease out there. There are some remedies out there, and we'll kind of flesh out some of those possible remedies and also maybe understand the timeline on this whole process. Is it a lengthy timeline, or is it something that can be arbitrated rather quickly? We'll find out when we come back. You can call Harvell and Collins today at 252-726-9050. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We're talking about a subject that probably affects a lot of people, nuisance and nuisance laws, and what you do as far as trying to remedy this. Ian, you threw it out there, Cecil, before the last break. There are several remedies that one can take once if you have identified and started the process of a nuisance.
Well, these cases, they're going to almost always begin with a comprehensive letter from your lawyer to your neighbor, setting forth the details, and of course beginning to define the law, be it, you know, zoning violation, restrictive covenant violation, ordinance violation, and kind of a, you know, a cease and desist. Okay, those letters, by the way, everybody thinks that we lawyers, you know, have a magic wand and that these letters that go out are the beginning and the end. And of course they just so many times statistically are not. They're helpful and we have to do them and they are the first step, but many times they just appear on a doorstep with deaf ears. So, the next step of course will be that Wes of course will file, pleadings to have this nuisance cease and desist, and I'll let Wes take it from there. But the remedy sometimes in these cases is that remedy that we've all heard about, which is injunctive relief versus money damages. These cases frame up a little bit differently. Don't you agree, Wes?
I do. Normally, if you're looking for, obviously, the relief of having whatever the activity is cease, then that's going to be in the form of injunctive relief. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But going back to other types of, you know, situations where you have potentially, you know, a covenant violation. Well, of course, if we're talking about covenants and we're talking about a subdivision, well, the association through its board of directors, first of all, has a duty to require compliance. So sometimes we may be not only contacting the neighbor who's engaged in whatever the activity is, we may also be contacting the board of the association, asking them to enforce provision A1 or whatever it may be of the covenant. So we have to look at that, but we're primarily talking about a nuisance situation, and that would be more of a private direct type claim against whoever the violator, the owner of the property where the violation is taking place, is, you know, against that owner as a defendant. So you can get damages in certain circumstances when there is a nuisance, but you're going to have to show a loss. You're going to have to show, you know, actual loss, as it relates to, you know, if you're operating a business and you weren't able to do it, weren't able to operate the business because of the nuisance, those type of things. But ultimately, you're looking for injunctive relief. And when we file these types of cases, in many circumstances, we are seeking some immediate relief and not just relief at the end of the case. Because as we know and as we've talked about on the program, many times these cases, almost every time, it takes a while to get to the end of the case. So if we can show, once we file our lawsuit, that there is irreparable harm, and this would be irreparable harm, and we can show that there's a substantial likelihood of success on the merits, then if we can show that, then in many cases we are able to get what's called a preliminary injunction. And what that is it's an order of the court that is entered preliminarily, meaning pretty early on in the court after a short hearing, pretty early on in the case after a short hearing, to bring some control under whatever the circumstance is. And a lot of times nuisance cases are won or lost at that stage, because if we're in a preliminary injunction posture and the court enters an order, well, the barking dog, you're going to have to do something with the barking dog. Send it to grandma's house. Mm-hmm. You know, kennel the dog, do something. And, you know, the court enters that order, then that's an order of the court you have to comply with. If you don't, then that's contempt. And contempt could be punished by imprisonment, fines, serious business. But until you go through those proper procedures, then you're really, you know, are in that subjective world of, well, I don't like what's going on your property, and it's affecting what's going on my property. And then it's kind of the, you know, the neighbor rub in many cases, mm-hmm. where people just don't get along because of the circumstance. But all of that stops when you get to court. But back to the evidence, yes, I would say that even at the preliminary injunction stage, witnesses, video, audio, as much as you can possibly put together to show what's really going on the property and why you say this is a nuisance and it's affecting your ability to reasonably and quietly, you know, enjoy your own property, that's incredibly important, because coming to court and just saying the dog won't stop barking won't get you there. There's Yep. no reason in the world why you cannot have the audio recording, why you can't have the video recording, why you can't record whatever this, you know, allegedly ongoing nuisance may be. So evidence is really important in these cases. And then, you know, we're talking about at the preliminary injunction stage, you know, the person in the robe is the person who decides. So that preliminary stage of these cases really comes down to whatever evidence you can put on before that one judge. And that one judge makes that determination. Now, the ultimate determination with regard to whether you get a permanent injunction, an injunction that's going to enjoin activity even after the case, you would have a right to request a jury on that and have a jury trial on that if you either side would be able to do that, actually, plaintiff or defendant. So those are the primary remedies. As with any case, as we've talked about, you know, on Let's Talk Legal here with our firm, Harvell and Collins, over the years, we always try to resolve issues for our clients short of the litigation if we can. That's almost always better for the client if we can do that. But we are happy to proceed with litigation if it's warranted. But that's never the first, well, it's hardly ever the first step. Yeah. There may be certain circumstances.
Good explanation. Gentlemen, let's take our final break here so we have a little bit of time in our closing segment, and we can put a bow in this topic here. This is a good topic to discuss, and I'm sure it affects a lot of our listeners. If you have questions about nuisance where you live, call Harvell and Collins today, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal, and Wes is going to yield his time to you, Cecil. We have about a minute and a half left.
Okay. Well, one thing that's just kind of interesting to ponder on for a moment is that, you know, so many of your legal cases many times are about what happened, you know, in the past. Did the person have capacity when they signed their will? You know, did Mrs. Jones, you know, cross over the center line and hit the pedestrian? You know, did he run the red light? Did he fully pay the contract price? He says he did. The other people say he didn't, or that they changed it. They're facts that are in the past. Isn't it interesting that with regard to this case, and we've talked about the evidence and what kinds of evidence there would be, but there are facts that are ever present, right now happening, in the present tense. And so, yes, absolutely, judges are going to take those cases very seriously, and there's no reason for them not to want to hear from current witnesses, other property owners in the area, to see the video, to see the photographs, because it's all readily available. And so, and sometimes in past cases, those things are not available. The witness who, the person who witnessed the accident, unfortunately, is no longer living, or whatever the case might be. So these are interesting cases, and yes, I agree, this is a good topic today.
Yeah, and I'm sure it resonated with many listeners out there, whether they live in HOAs, homeowners associations, or just by themselves out in unincorporated area. But noise travels and other nuisances pop up. So a great topic for discussion. And if you need to have further discussion with Harvell and Collins, I would urge you to call 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com for a consultation on something that affects your well-being and your peaceful living. Great topic, gentlemen. Thank you. And we look forward to our conversation next Tuesday.